We're not just looking at the brigade combat teams. This year, we're looking at all the support elements as well.
The U.S. Army considers deeper cuts. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 30th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Kuskokwim Native Corporation plans for future business with the Donlin Gold Mine.
We have a lot of work to do as far as training and employment opportunities so that our children and grandchildren can be CEOs of the new subsidiaries that we're creating.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow.
And by
Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine.
The U.S. Army is looking at greater cutbacks than previously considered, and there could be Alaska impacts. Fort Wainwright and Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson are among posts nationwide being considered for reductions as part of the Army's 2020 force structure realignment. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Army plan proposes drastic reductions in the numbers of people at 30 individual Army posts. It uses 2011 staffing levels as a starting point. At Fort Wainwright, that would mean going from 7,400 people down to as few as 1,600, and at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson from 6,800 to 1,500 people by the year 2020. The Army is taking public comment on an environmental assessment of the proposal. Kathy Kropp with the Army Environmental Command in Texas says the cuts are bigger than a proposal reviewed last year that looked at reducing the nation's Army by about 70,000 to around 490,000 soldiers.
So now we're a year later, and the Quadrennial Defense Review comes out, and it says the Army needs to cut to 440,000 or 450,000 in that range. And if the sequester continues into 2016, we may need to cut to as low as 420,000.
Kropp says that doubles the potential reduction and broadens it to include non-enlisted personnel.
We're not just looking at the brigade combat teams. This year, we're looking at all the support elements as well.
Kropp emphasizes that the cuts outlined for each base total more than the overall targeted force reduction, giving the Army downsizing options.
It doesn't mean that some of the installations won't have the maximum cut. But in no way will every installation listed get the maximum cut.
The Army finds no environmental impacts from the proposed personnel reductions, but is taking feedback on effects, including socioeconomic impacts. Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Luke Hopkins is optimistic the community will again stand up in support of maintaining a strong presence at Fort Wainwright.
They will have these community listening sessions like we had last year, and we had an incredible turnout. It was very strong. This year, in this latest programmatic environmental assessment, it says that they will take community input, and it will be one of the four factors that they're basing their decisions on. Well, we had a pretty strong showing last year. I think we're going to have a strong showing because these listening sessions are expected to happen in September. So we're going to do it again.
U.S. Representative Don Young says he's experienced numerous post-war Army reductions over the decades and urges Alaskans not to panic about the latest proposal.
Don't worry about things you do not have control of. And I say that very sincerely. We believe our merits outweigh the worry. We believe the location outweighs the worry.
Young points to the quick overseas deployment capability of Alaska-based forces. The Army's Kropp says there's no deadline by which the Army has to release a final finding on impacts, nor is there a timeline for finalizing or implementing reductions. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Donlin Gold and the Kuskokwim Corporation have signed a surface rights agreement for the proposed gold mine located 120 miles upriver of Bethel. The deal gives the Native Corporation rights to some construction contracts and sets financial terms for decades to come. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
The regional Native Corporation, Chilista, owns the subsurface rights at the Donlin site, while the Kuskokwim Corporation has the surface rights. Maver Carey is president and CEO of TKC. She says the financial terms of the deal are confidential.
I can say that over the next few years, we've got a few milestone payments that Donlin has agreed to pay us. For example, the signing bonus for actually signing the surface use. What we did with that is we were able to provide our first elders dividend, And then a portion of what we got, we need to start and utilize for getting our companies ready to go.
The open pit gold mine that Donlin Gold is now working toward has been in the works for more than a decade. It's currently in the permitting stage. The Kuskokwim Corporation was formed in 1977 when 10 upriver village corporations merged. They have over 3,000 shareholders and a portfolio of companies from construction and apartments to aerospace operations. The new companies Carrie mentions would construct and operate a new port on the Kuskokwim River, downriver from Crooked Creek, serving a couple of Donlin barges carrying fuel and supplies. TKC secured the rights to that contract in the agreement. The deal replaces an agreement set to expire next year and sets the terms for accessing and building on the land. The corporation also plans to play a big role in the reclamation of the mine site decades into the future after the millions of ounces of gold have been dug out. Kurt Parkin is External Affairs Manager for Donlin Gold.
Really just marks a milestone in that partnership that has been going on for quite some time. And it's an agreement that both entities to advance the project into the future.
The new agreement runs until 2031 and can be extended if and when the mine comes into operation. Carrie says the agreement has provisions for shareholder scholarships and hiring. While the company calls it an historic agreement, Carrie says the agreement does not mean instant wealth.
Instead, it's a legacy that we're going to leave for our children and our grandchildren. And when I say legacy, I not only mean a financial legacy, I mean we have a lot of work to do as far as training and employment opportunities so that our children and grandchildren can be CEOs of the new subsidiaries that we're creating.
The open pit mine would be among the largest gold mines in the world. The project is owned by NovaGold and Barrick Gold, two Canadian companies. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
$153 million is the huge new settlement for back contract support costs due the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium from the Indian Health Service. The settlement clears up a 15-year backlog of underpayments and was announced on Friday. Attorney Lloyd Miller says it's similar to the recent settlement with South Central Foundation, with one big difference.
What distinguishes it is that it is the largest settlement in history ever achieved between a tribe or tribal organization in the United States.
The settlement is for a 15-year period, 1999 to 2014. Miller says because the health service contracts to run ANTHC are large, there have also been large liabilities that have accumulated because of the shortage in contract funding.
Because the federal agency, the Indian Health Service, has not been paying the full contract amount that was due to operate the hospital. As a result, cuts have been made in some years. New service lines have not been opened as rapidly as they could have been. Revenues from Medicare and Medicaid have suffered because services have not been provided. And these are all of the elements that went into the settlement with the Indian Health Service.
Miller has been fighting for tribal contract payments based on U.S. Supreme Court decisions in 2005 and 2012. Miller says President Obama has asked Congress for full contract support for tribal contracts going forward. There have been between $300 million and $400 million in IHS tribal settlements in Alaska and nearly $600 million nationally. There are still numerous back claims left to settle, both in Alaska and across the nation. ANTHC President Andy Tuber could not be reached for comment. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, residents in Teller are upset with gold mining plans.
I don't want it to become like Nome around here, because if you see lots of dredges, you'll probably not even see any fish.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Attention, Alaska gardeners. Invasive weeds are a threat to landscaping, lawns, and gardens. They can spread and harm Alaska wildlife and waterways. Potted plants, hay, gravel, and soil, even clothing and vehicles can transport invasive plants to Alaska. So learn more at alaskainvasives.org. Let's protect Alaska together. Visit alaskainvasives.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Agriculture and the U.S. Forest Service.
The death of an inmate at Seward's Spring Creek Maximum Security Prison has been ruled a homicide. In the early hours yesterday morning, 29-year-old Eliu Gillespie was found unresponsive in his cell and taken to Providence Seward Medical Care Center. Gillespie was pronounced dead about an hour later. On investigation, state authorities have ruled the death the result of an inmate-on-inmate assault. Alaska State Troopers and Alaska Bureau of Investigation are investigating the incident. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ibsen would not say if a weapon was used and said details would come out in the report. Gillespie had been sentenced to 50 years with 29 suspended after his conviction in a 2009 shooting that left two other men dead. Ibsen says no charges have currently been filed against the other inmate in the continuing investigation. According to troopers, Gillespie's cellmate, 25-year-old Jason Rack, has been identified as the suspect. Rack has been serving a 29-year sentence for attempted murder in a 2008 shooting at the Diamond Center Mall in Anchorage. According to troopers, Gillespie and Rack were held in the segregation unit and both have a history of disciplinary actions within the correction system. In December of last year, Rack was involved in an assault on another inmate who sustained critical injuries. State troopers believe that a set of human remains found on ADAC this month are those of a long-lost camper. Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ibsen.
Based on a wallet with some ID that was found near the remains, we believe that this is Samuel Arrington, who was 57 at the time of his disappearance.
Arrington went missing in July 2008 during a camping trip at Lake Betty. The lake is about a mile from the spot where two U.S. Fish and Wildlife workers discovered the skeletal remains. ADAC police collected evidence from the area on behalf of the troopers. The state medical examiner has performed an autopsy, but Ibsen says it didn't reveal much.
So the remains are going to be shipped out of state to try and pin down the cause of death and do positive identification.
Right now, foul play is not suspected. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has dismissed a challenge to Alaska's signature gathering laws because of a lack of standing. Robert Raymond of Shorewood, Wisconsin, filed his lawsuit against the state of Alaska in 2012. He believes his First Amendment rights are being violated because he is not allowed to distribute ballot petitions in Alaska unless he is a resident. Three separate federal appeals courts have overturned similar laws in Arizona, Oklahoma, and Michigan. But because Raymond did not have a specific cause he wanted to work on and could not show he was immediately harmed by the law, the Ninth Circuit Court threw out his case on June 24th. 24 people in Alaska have been diagnosed with HIV since January. Normally, that's the total number of new diagnoses for an entire year, not just 6 months. Now Alaskans have a new way to help prevent HIV infections. The Center for Disease Control recently released new guidelines for a daily pill that can prevent new infections. But as KSKA's Ann Hillman learned, it's a valuable tool, but not a cure-all.
Pre-exposure prophylaxis is commonly called PrEP. It's a drug that's also used to treat HIV and prevent it from developing into AIDS. PrEP is aimed at people who do risky things, like have multiple anonymous sexual partners or share needles. Studies show that if a person takes it consistently, every day, it's 92% effective.
Taking a pill every day if you're practicing these high-risk behaviors isn't easy. Having HIV infection and coping with that is harder.
That's Susan Jones with the state section of epidemiology. She says using PrEP is also a good choice for HIV-negative individuals who are in relationships with people who are HIV-positive. The drug, called Truvada, has been available since 2012, but guidelines for using it as a preventative tool were only released by the CDC in May. Jones says now people need to learn about it.
The task of identifying those people at high risk really fall upon the healthcare providers. And they're not always used to asking those tough questions about sexual behavior.
Part of that may be because sexual behavior is changing. One-third of the people who tested positive for HIV this year were men who met their partners through phone apps or online. But Davy Norris from the Alaskan AIDS Assistance Association says the new technology isn't the problem.
It's not really the technology that's the issue. It's the way people are using that tool. So young men are having multiple anonymous sexual partners and not using condoms and just kind of doing it very unsafely.
Nora says people don't need to stop using the apps. They just need to be responsible when they find a partner that way. And he emphasizes that using PrEP isn't an excuse to stop using condoms.
You know, we want everyone to have a comprehensive understanding of HIV prevention and, you know, to try multiple things because that's the most effective way.
He also notes that only half of the new infections are in men who have sex with men.
So it's certainly not fair to say that it's just a gay issue.
Anyone can be infected by HIV, especially if they participate in risky behaviors. But Jones says PrEP could be an effective tool in stopping the spread of the disease.
Maybe there's 23 more people out there that we could prevent from getting infection at the end of this year.
Truvada is widely available. However, without insurance, it costs about $1,000 per month. Studies show that side effects are minimal. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
A massive dredge looking to work the waters near two communities in western Alaska is sparking concerns from subsistence users and brought the Alaska Department of Natural Resources to villages west of Nome last week to talk to residents about their concerns. Nome miner Hank Shimshat owns the AU Grabber or Gold Grabber, an 80-foot-long barge dredge with an excavator arm. He submitted permits to mine in Grantley Harbor this season, just east of the communities of Teller and Brevik Mission. But Jack Karen, the natural resource manager with DNR, says the project's scope is large enough to require an individual permit, a process that requires baseline data on water and wildlife and could take up to a year. But Karen says all that work might not be necessary.
If the applicant comes in and revises, changes his mining plan to be something that is of a scale that these issues can be addressed, then it's possible he could be issued a permit.
Any permit for the kind of mining ubiquitous in neighboring Nome makes the residents in Teller, Brevik Mission, and Mary's Igloo uneasy. They use Grantley Harbor for subsistence activities and sent a letter to DNR opposing Shimshat's operation. Many residents are upset DNR is allowing the permit to undergo further review.
This is very disturbing that DNR giving them a chance to review their application. First, you know, the backhoe is going to disturb our land, so what are they going to come up with? You know, suction dredges next?
At Wednesday's community meeting in Teller, Karen and two other DNR employees addressed community concerns about dredging in Grantley Harbor at the invitation of Kowarik, a regional nonprofit. Many residents from Brevik Mission boated over to attend. DNR's Karen says since the state owns the subsurface of Grantley Harbor, Shimshat's mining operation has a legal right to apply for a dredging permit and revise his application.
The person has a legal right to the subsurface estate, the mineral estate, and what we have is the right to ensure that how he accesses it, it's done in a reasonable manner that doesn't cause undue disruption to the local community. But he has the right to change his application to try to address the concerns raised by the community.
That doesn't sit well with Teller's Jolene Oklesic. She was at the meeting and says her concerns revolve around subsistence.
I don't want it to become like Nome around here, because if you see lots of dredges, you'll probably not even see any fish or any wildlife.
Teller resident and famous Iditarod musher Joe Garney says the waters in Grantley Harbor are very different from the shallow waters of the Bering Sea at Nome. Garney says Grantley won't be able to withstand the impacts of dredging.
Even just the minimal equipment of suction dredges would be very destructive here. This is not necessarily self-healing waters with wave action like you have in the Bering Sea. This is old growth bottom.
Residents say federal concerns may come to bear. Several seal species protected by the Endangered Species Act also spend time in the harbor.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment. On the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at crowleyalaska.com.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is opening public comment on a plan to relax stellar sea lion protections and allow more commercial fishing in the Western Aleutian Islands. The agency's draft of its new regulations would pave the way for the first commercial harvests of Atka mackerel and Pacific cod since 2011. That's when federal managers banned fishing on those species in the Western Aleutians. It was intended to help an endangered population of sea lions, but commercial fishing interests and the state of Alaska argued that the science behind the fishing bans were faulty. After years of litigation and a comprehensive court-ordered reassessment of the protection plan, NOAA ruled that commercial fishing wouldn't jeopardize the sea lions if it was done right under the right conditions. Members of the public will have 45 days to weigh in on a draft of the new fishing regulations. The comment period will close on August 15th. NOAA aims to finalize the new rules by January 2015. A piece of state legislation passed this spring opened the door for more competition among medevac providers in the state, and one company has taken advantage of that opportunity. Margaret Friedenauer of station KHNS has more.
Medevac provider Guardian Flight bought medevac insurance provider Apollo Meditrans on June 17th. Combining the two names, the company now goes by Apollo MT by Guardian Flight. The move means customers will now buy their coverage plans with the same company that provides the actual service, and the company can combine resources, according to Guardian Flight Vice President Shannon Pollack.
The reason why we were so interested in pursuing the relationship with Apollo is because they have the largest membership base of anyone in Alaska. And then, of course, we have the largest footprint from an air medical perspective, anyone in Alaska currently with 11 bases and a few coming up soon in the future. So together, Apollo MT and Guardian can provide the most comprehensive coverage to anyone in Alaska, including individuals in the Southeast.
Pollack said coverage for current Apollo policyholders will not be affected, even if a different carrier than Guardian is used. However, new and renewed policies will cover Guardian medevac services only. Apollo and Guardian used to be under the same ownership. About 5 years ago, they split, with Apollo focusing on providing membership plans to cover medevac costs with various providers, and Guardian being one of those emergency medevac services. The companies had disagreements throughout that time about costs and coverage, including a string of legal disputes. Now, with Guardian's purchase of Apollo, Pollack says the companies are working together to merge employees and services.
You know, if I live in Southeast Alaska, I would want to know that the membership that I'm purchasing will be tied directly to a flight company who can transport me during a time of need, and that is where we are back at.
Legislation passed this spring making it easier for companies to operate medevac membership plans without them being classified as insurance plans and requiring stricter regulation. That opened the door to more competition, Pollack said. Because of that, Apollo MT by Guardian wants to keep its membership numbers confidential.
Because of the changes and now, you know, essentially, you know, our program will be competing with other air medical programs. I think that's confidential. We'd like to keep that confidential, but we'll just say that it's substantial.
Airlift Northwest and Guardian are the major medevac providers in Southeast, with Guardian and LifeMed Alaska also providing services statewide. Airlift Northwest operates its own membership program in emergency air services through a partnership with the University of Washington. Guardian has expanded the number of bases it has across the state in recent years to 11. Pollack says more bases are planned to be announced soon. Airlift Northwest has a plane and crew based in Juneau. Timothy Baker of the former Apollo Meditrans said Apollo employees are staying on the job to help with the transition of the sale to Guardian.
We're not abandoning anything. It was by no means anything that was negative. We're going to be there for our members the entire time and continue to do so. And so is Guardian Flight. They're going to continue to offer any support in any way necessary.
Medevac insurance is important for many rural Alaska residents since insurance doesn't always fully cover medevacs, which can run in the tens of thousands of dollars. Plans from Apollo by Guardian and Airlift Northwest run between $99 to $125 a year for a household. Pollack said Apollo MT by Guardian has no plans to change membership costs at this time. Reporting from Haines, I'm Margaret Friedenauer.
The city of Juneau held a ceremonial groundbreaking for the Mendenhall Valley Library at Diamond Park last week. This means the Juneau Public Library's branch, now located inside a mall, will soon be in its own standalone building. KTOO's Lisa Fu talked to a few of those who helped move the new library forward and has this story.
Donna Pierce says the groundbreaking is a euphoric day for her.
It's a wonderful day for a whole lot of people who really thought this might never happen.
Pierce was the librarian of the Valley Library when it moved out of the Floyd Dryden Middle School and opened in the Mendenhall Mall in 1983. She later became the library director, then deputy city manager until she retired in 2006. Most recently, Pierce served as project manager for the new library. She says the mall space has served the public well.
But with the development of Diamond Park and all of the civic facilities we have here now, I think that it really is going to become the community center for the Valley.
Former library director Barbara Berg says the Valley has also grown.
The Valley is a more mature community now. It was sort of an outlier when we moved to that mall. But now it's the most populous part of the city. It has the most kids.
As library director, Berg was responsible for securing most of the funding needed for the $14 million project. Half came from a state grant and another $4.7 million from a 1% city sales tax ballot measure. The Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries contributed another $1 million. Berg says having the library be a standalone facility is important.
I think when people see a space that's designed to be a library, rather than just having a bunch of shelves in a box, they're going to have a completely different view of how the library functions.
The library system still devotes a large part of its roughly $2.2 million budget to purchasing books and media. But current library director Robert Barr says the mission of libraries has shifted.
We are a lot less about being gatekeepers for knowledge and a lot more about being a place where people can come together to learn new things, to gather together, to meet, to work on community projects.
The library will have a large children's room and a teen room, which Barr says is appropriate being near Thunder Mountain High School. Scheduled completion of the Mendenhall Valley Library is fall 2015. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Ellen Lockyer and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. If you've served in the military, the Alaska VA welcomes you home and thanks you for your service. Enroll now for health care benefits. Yukon Kuskokwim Village veterans can enroll at the Veterans Standdown event at Bethel August 1st through 3rd at the Old Armory Killbuck Gym. Learn about VA, state, and community programs, meet with staff, enjoy a free meal, and receive free military surplus gear. Apply early at 543-6705. This message sponsored by the VA.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.